My guest tonight is somebody who's been at the centre of a huge scandal rocking America this week. Some say his crime was worse than Watergate. Others go further and say it was the worst thing that's ever happened in the history of planet Earth.
When you've offended the most powerful people in Hollywood, what you want to do is quickly ally yourself with a really popular fellow Brit. That's why I'm here with Piers Morgan. It's the right decision, right?
What's he done? Well, he made that outrageous, disgraceful and unacceptable error of refusing to take seriously the rich and famous of Hollywood. That is no laughing matter.
I'm leaving the country. Goodbye. Favourite intro ever.
You can take that smile off your face.
Beer.
Well, I thought you'd need some beer because, frankly, Ricky.
Go on.
You've been a very naughty boy, haven't you?
Okay, now it's getting creepy.
Well, you know what happens to naughty boys back in Britain?
Oh, this is getting weird. Larry King never did this.
You know what happens to naughty boys, Ricky. They get taken into darkened rooms and they get a thoroughly good spanking.
Okay, I'm leaving. Oh, dear.
Ricky Gervais, can I ask you, as fellow Brit, well, first of all, thank you, because until you came along, I was the most reviled Brit on TV in America. So you've comfortably exceeded all expectations.
I always thought you'd be deported before me. But it's touch and go now, isn't it?
How has this week been for you? How do you feel? Do you feel remotely remorseful?
No. What have I done wrong?
You've said these terrible things about these pampered prima donnas in Hollywood.
Well, what did I say that was so bad?
Would you want to remind you?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Let's play a clip. Let's play what I think was the one nearest the knuckle.
Okay.
Also not nominated, I Love You, Philip Morris, Jim Carrey and Ewan McGregor, two heterosexual actors pretending to be gay. So the complete opposite of some famous Scientologist then. What?
Now, obviously, I must have been the only one who didn't know what on earth you were talking about. Or who you were talking about,
nor
obviously.
Nor do I.
Yeah, you wouldn't either.
No idea.
You were just throwing it out there.
Yeah, exactly.
So you just conveniently came up with that line.
Yeah. Cheers.
Cheers. I'm giving you the beer because we know how you perform after a few beers at the close. When you see the reaction of an audience, it's interesting watching your face as the audience begin to gasp and groan in horror. I would argue you seem to get a bit of kick out of that than you do out of a joke.
I get as big a kick out of it. I also know where these beats are coming. I know when they're going to laugh. I know when they're going to gasp. I know when they're going to groan. I know this is considered comedy. This isn't me going out there and saying the most outrageous things I could think of. I mean, if people are offended at the things I said at that ceremony, they should never come and see my stand-up.
Well, I've seen your stand-up.
Well, exactly.
That was a tea party compared to your stand-up.
Of course, that was daytime television, on network TV across America. And if your aim is to shock, a Christian family in Idaho at 5 o'clock, then that's too easy. And my main aim isn't to shock people at all.
What is your aim, then?
I want to make people laugh. I want to do a good job. But on my terms, really, it's not a popularity contest with me. If someone said, oh, you could make that joke more palatable, more people would like you, I'd go, well, that's not my joke then. You know, I do this for me, really. And I think you've got to be true to yourself.
Do you clear any of the material with anyone before you say it?
What were you mean, officials?
The Globes, for example.
No. When they took me on, the first year they said, do you want to host the Globes? I think it's because I'd done, a couple of appearances at the Emmys and the Globes, and it was fun. And they said, would you like to host the Globes? And I said, can I say what I want? And they said yes.
So the Hollywood Foreign Press Association, they have no warning of what's coming?
No, not at all. And to be fair to them, the first year and the second year, they kept that. They didn't want to see it.
One of the leading figures from that organisation came out afterwards and was vaguely condemnatory. Thought you'd gone over the line a few times.
But what was he meant to say? If someone says to him, did he think you went over the top? He's got to be honest. And to his sensibilities, maybe I did, He said to me beforehand, he believes in freedom of speech. Also, you know, all he said was, I think if I remember, he said that those attacks weren't necessarily the thoughts of the... Because and they're not, you know. All he said was, I didn't see the script. It's nothing to do with me, which is fine, which is absolutely true. They didn't see the script. It was nothing to do with them. I'm sure my sense of humour isn't theirs, but they hired me for a job. And if they didn't want me, they shouldn't have hired me.
Someone asked me, you know, what do you think? As a fellow Brit on TV in America, what do you think of what happened with Ricky? I said, well, it's a bit like inviting a hammerhead shark to dinner. And then when he eats all the guests, you start complaining. I mean, well, you kind of know what you're going to get.
But that's one thing. But also, as I say, I don't think I did anything wrong. I honestly, you know, those were like jibes at these people. And I'm sure they've got a sense of humour. I'm sure Johnny Depp is one of the most successful, richest, most loved, most handsome people on the planet. And I'm sure he's got a sense of humour. If he hasn't, all those things are wasted. But I'm sure he has. Do you really think... that he hasn't seen the press about the tourist, do you know? Do you really think he's hurt that I didn't like the tourist?
Well, I like your confidence. I mean, having interviewed lots of Hollywood stars before, I think your confidence that none of them would be offended is probably stretching it a bit. I mean, they can be delicate little flowers.
Well, OK, well, if they are, I'm sorry for them being offended, but I'm not sorry for anything I said because I'm not going to apologise for... being true to myself. And no one has the right not to be offended. And don't forget, just because you're offended, it doesn't mean you're in the right. A lot of people are offended by mixed marriage. It doesn't mean they're right, you know? And
are there any limits for you in comedy?
There's nothing you shouldn't joke about. It depends what the joke is. Comedy comes from a good or a bad place. And I like to think that mine comes from a good place. You know, when you see my stand-up, on the face of it, I'm looking at taboo subjects, but they're to get me to a position. They're to get the audience to a place they haven't been before. I think a comedian's job isn't just to make people laugh. I think it's to make people think.
So okay? You take the art of comedy pretty seriously.
Well, I do, because I think with comedy you should have no prejudices. I think as soon as you have prejudices, it falls down comedically. Comedy is an intellectual pursuit. Comedy appeals to the intellect, not to the emotional. As soon as you go emotional, it stops being funny. It starts being rallying. That's why a real racist joke isn't funny, because it's not true. And someone in the audience is going, well, he's having a go at something I can't help. Yeah. Okay? You have a go at things people do. If someone goes crazy and trashes a hotel room and, you know, talk about it. But you don't talk about someone because of their sexuality or the colour of their skin.
I want to play another clip from the infamous Golden Globes night.
You know our next presenter from such films as Hudson Hawk, Look Who's Talking, Mercury Rising, Colour of Night, Fifth Element, Hearts War. Please welcome Ashton Kutcher's dad, Bruce Willis.
See, what I loved about it, it's actually great watching you watching this, because you were just smirking all the way through that.
Yeah, I knew what was coming.
Yeah. When I watched that, when that line came off, I just burst out laughing. I was on Twitter and immediately just said, all right, already I'm in complete hysterics here.
Again, who's going to be offended by that?
I don't know. Ashton Kutcher? Bruce Willis?
No, they know it's the joke. They know, again, the target there is my, I suppose, misinformation.
Did you speak to either of them? Well, Bruce was there, right?
No, I didn't. The people I spoke to were... I spoke to Tom Hanks and Tim Allen. They were cool with it, you know. Jennifer Lopez was the funniest. I was coming out, and it was halfway through the show, and I was going on stage, and they're waiting. There's Alec Baldwin and Jennifer Lopez. And she turned around and said, Gervais, I will kill you, man. What are you going to... I said, it's fine. She went, oh, man, what... You? I said, "I go." She goes, you're not going to have a go at me. I said, well, of course I'm going to have a go at you. I'm not going to have a go at him. Look at the size of him. Right? I said, I've got to have a go at someone and pick the big man or the woman. I'm going to have a go at the woman. She went, you had a go at men out there. I said, no, Johnny Depp, he's pretty. He's not like, he's a lady. So, and she went, oh man, I'm going to kill you. And I went out there, I did the thing, which was Jenny from the block, if the block in question is the one on Rodeo Drive. But yeah. And as she came around the corner, she went, okay. She was okay. Again, this is it. Half the time you hear these people, they were offended. They weren't. This is the thing with things like so immediate. You know, you're on Twitter. Now, Twitter is like evolution amongst bacteria. Mm. It's so much faster. Mm. So one gets... And then it spreads like
a virus. The best Twitter thing that was going on, and I joined in this, was that you'd been shot dead halfway through the show.
I didn't know about this
because
until
you disappeared,
afterwards.
And it suddenly became... Somebody started this. Where is Ricky Gervais?
Yes.
And then it became, well, where is he? And then the minutes ticked by, and we kept waiting, and there's no sign of you.
The most serious one that actually was a conspiracy theory that went on was that the organisers had stopped me going out.
Yes.
But this continued after I then came out.
Yes.
Which didn't make sense.
Well, you seemed to look like you came out a little cowed when you came
out. No, not at all. They were all scheduled, and as if they'd say you can't go out there or tone it down. It wouldn't happen.
I want to play another clip now from the night, which was Robert Downey Jr. who decided to take you on.
I love this next presenter. He's so cool. He's the star of Iron Man, Two Girls and a Guy, Wonder Boys. Sorry, these porn films. What? Kiss Kiss Bang Bang. Bowfinger. Really? Yeah. Up the Academy. Come on. He has done all those films, but many of you in this room probably know him best from such facilities as the Betty Ford Clinic and Los Angeles County Jail. Please welcome Robert Downey Jr.
Aside from the fact that it's been hugely mean-spirited with mildly sinister undertones, I'd say the vibe of the show is pretty good so far, wouldn't you?
Now, you're laughing there.
Yeah.
Was he joking?
Of course he was joking.
How do you know?
Because I've met him, and he's got a great sense of humour.
Did you meet him afterwards?
No, beforehand.
So you're guessing he's joking?
Well, I'm guessing that he's not bothered by anything I said. Why would he be? He's Robert Downey Jr. He's the coolest man in the world. Why would he care? And it's all this conspiracy theory that the crowd was stunned into silence. Well, someone put a laugh track on then. Because they're all laughing. It's crazy.
Well, obviously, your audiences at these kind of things, half of them are roaring with laughter.
Yeah.
And half of them are too shocked to say anything because they can't believe any presenter. No hosts do this in America.
Oh, it's also the worst room for a comic because Jerry Seinfeld said he'd never do an award show because they're not there to be made laugh. They're there to see if they've won an award.
Yes.
And, of course, as it goes on, with everyone that wins, three people lost. So it's exponential. The people that go... I don't care anymore.
So you end up with basically two-thirds of the room are extremely unhappy.
And drunk.
And you've got to try and make them laugh.
Yeah.
And your strategy is to try and pour on the misery.
No, my strategy is to make me laugh. If there's anyone in the world like me, that's a bonus. I'm very Darwinist about this. You do your own thing and then you see if you survive. And I wouldn't have it any other way. Because if you start second-guessing and you're trying to find people that are like you or change it to make certain people like you, you're finished. And you're finished as a comedian more than any other thing in the world. You know, it's not my job to worry about what people think of me. That's a job for a politician, OK? I don't care what people think of me. I care that I've done a good job and I care that I told the truth. That's all I care about. If it's funny, what a great bonus that is.
When we come back, I'm going to ask you about what I think was the most contentious part of your speech at the Globes.
OK.
Sure, in his mind, it was all in good fun. And it was, but there were some awkward, you know, in the room, being in the room, it was like, yeah.
I want to say last night I watched the Golden Globes, I was offended by Ricky Gervais. I was offended that a comedian could be that funny at an award show. Ricky was hilarious.
I thought he's brilliant.
He was naughty, wasn't he? Wow. Wow, I almost cried. But he's so funny.
And that, in a nutshell, is the secret, isn't it? I mean, some of them, I suspect, are almost crying. For the reasons we've discussed, they may have lost out on an award, they're feeling miserable. You hammer home the nail into the coffin, but it's so darkly funny.
Well, I hope that no one was truly offended. I hope, you know, I never went out there to embarrass anyone in the room. They weren't the butt of my jokes. It was more like a gentle ribbing or a roasting, you know. I admire most of those people, you know, in the room, and I've got nothing against you know, Bruce Willis or Sly Stallone. I think they're great. I think they're great actors. And I was never trying to... I'm surprised that anyone thought they would be offended. Mm. That's the strange thing. I don't know if they were, but I'm pretty sure they weren't. No one wants to be embarrassed, but...
You said that people like Charlie Sheen and Mel Gibson are gifts from the comedy god, and I want to play you the clip of Charlie Sheen from the Globes as well.
Welcome to the 68th Annual Golden Globe Awards, live from the Beverly Hilton Hotel in Los Angeles. It's going to be a night of partying and heavy drinking. Or as Charlie Sheen calls it, breakfast.
That's a great gag.
That's like a sweet old daytime television gag, you know. A guy's in the news, he got drunk, you know, and it was in the newspapers. It's nothing. He's not sitting at home going, oh, how did he find out? Do you know what I mean? He's going, oh, that's the end of it. And Mel Gibson, it was all over the news. There's no one going, who told Gervais? You know?
But do you care? Let me ask you.
And they're both, and they're, Mel Gibson's doing another film. Charlie Sheen's back at work.
But devil's advocate, if you've got an addiction problem, as I suspect both of those two have in some form, right, and they'd be going through a pretty harrowing time, is anything like that ever off limits? Do you care about what they may be going through in their private lives?
Or? But I don't know. They have an addiction. I don't know.
If you do, would it make a difference?
Also, I'm not judging them. Hmm. I'm not judging them for what they did.
You're mocking them, aren't you?
No, I'm not. I'm confronting the elephant in the room. They hired me. Like I'm going to go out there and not talk about the issues in their industry. Don't forget, I've got to be an outsider there. Mm. I mustn't come out there as everyone's mate and schmooze. That's nauseating. I've got to come out there and I've got to roast them.
Do you think you've pricked the balloons of award ceremonies in America? Almost irreparably. Well, they can't go back now. They're being too
backslapping. It won't make a difference. It won't make a difference. They'll either carry on and they'll get a sense of humour about it, or they'll go back to, we want someone who says we're brilliant.
But the joke I thought was nearest the knuckle, simply because I know American culture quite well now, and they're a very Christian nation here in America, was what you said right at the end that almost got phased out. And I just want to play this back to you.
Thanks, everyone in the room, for being good sports. Thanks to NBC. Thanks to Hollywood Foreign Press. Thank you for watching at home. And thank you to God for making me an atheist. Thank you.
What's up with that?
Well, if you're a believer in God, you're a Christian, as many tens of millions in America are, you could see you as poking fun at their religion.
Not at all. How many people thank God every time they say thank God? I don't get offended. Do I?
But you must be aware that a lot of people in America would potentially find that offensive.
What, because I'm saying I don't believe in God?
Yeah, because you're kind of mocking them, you know.
No, I'm not. I'm not mocking them. People's beliefs aren't my concern at all. I certainly don't differentiate between religions either. I look at all religions the same. Unlike religious people, I look at all religions equally.
You were religious till you were about 8 years old, is that right?
Yeah, I was brought up a Christian, yeah.
And what happened to change your mind then?
I used to go to Sunday school all the time. I believed in... We got to realise that when you're a working-class kid, I came from a very poor working-class background. My dad was a labourer, my mum was a housewife. I lived in a poor estate over here, like the projects. Right? And to a working-class mum, her hope isn't that you become a doctor or a lawyer or an international comedian, it's that you don't die in a barroom fight. Mm. And they think the best way to do that is to take on Christian values, which preach immorality. And but they haven't got the monopoly on good. This is my point. I'm not a Christian, but I live my life in a good way. And some people say, well, who says what's good is? Well, do you know what? I do. I'm good to people because it's the way I want to be treated. And I don't believe I'll be rewarded in heaven, but I do believe...
What do you think will happen to you?
I'll be rewarded now.
But when you die, what do you think happens?
People who liked me or remember me.
Are you a spiritual person, do you think?
Well, not in that sense, but I get a funny feeling when I see a friend or a mountain or an animal. It fills me with joy. My first love is science and nature, but it's explainable. And just because... I don't think that I'm going to go to heaven. I don't think my life's worthless. I don't think...
It's not really that. I always think with atheists, because I do believe, and I was brought up a Catholic and remain so.
Sure.
But, you know, I think everyone's entitled to their own beliefs,
absolutely,
whatever they may be. The problem for atheists, it must be so doom and gloom. When you get to, like, 70, 80, to think, well, hang on, that's it.
Oh, of course.
That's the end of everything.
That's right, yeah.
So you must fear death 10 times more than Christians, don't
Why?
You?
Why? I don't believe there's anything else.
Because it's the end.
But you're saying you believe because the alternative is too terrible.
Not why I believe, but certainly it's a very comforting thought to think that I don't think it all ends in the box under the ground.
But I can't help what I believe any more than you can. And it's up to you what you believe in. You know, and this thing about not believing in God, there are 2,780 odd gods. And so if you're a Christian, you believe in one of them and you don't believe in all the others. So
I'm going to come back in the next part with what I can only describe as truly horrifying photographs of you. Time magazine listed you under the 100 most influential people as an artist.
I couldn't keep a straight
face. Piss artist?
I know. I know. They couldn't find any more.
When you see lists like that, you must laugh, don't you?
I love it. I love it. I complained. I said, why is Nelson Mandela above me? I said he did nothing for 25 years.
You like to quote Oprah. You said, if you don't know who you are by the time you're famous, it'll define you.
No, I
Did you?
Do you mean I like to quote Oprah? I go around at parties.
Apparently you've quoted Oprah.
Like, I've used that one, yeah. That
so was, you did quote Oprah?
That was fascinating. It was very interesting because, you know, you do want to keep a sane head. It's very, very important as a, whatever you call me, comedian, satirist, maker of programmes, because I love the minutiae of human behaviour. I love that. I did it at The Office, extras. And I like excruciating social faux pas. Nothing gets you there like that. It's fundamental to us. You know, no one wants to make a fool of themselves.
We're talking of excruciating social faux pas and not wanting to make a fool of yourself. I'd like to show you a picture of a young Ricky, I think in your late teens.
Yeah.
Anything you want to say?
Yeah, eat your heart out, Johnny Depp.
I mean, you'd be a good-looking lad, but it's pretty camp, isn't it?
It's much more than camp. But it was the 80s. That's
things
my excuse.
Actually got worse, because I can now take you to your band, your pop band, called Shona Dancing, which was a kind of weird variant of Wham.
I mean,
what are you trying to be there? It's like, yes, you look like Jude Law there.
I'm trying to be David Sylvian from Japan. I'm trying to be David Bowie.
In a spandau.
Yeah, of course.
Your romantic kind of look.
Yeah, I tell you, we were sitting outside on a wall eating some fish and chips, me and Bill, the other guy in the van. And so it's 1983, it's on a Saturday, and we're dressed like that, okay? This police van came along and just slowed down. It was like the football was on. And they looked out, and this one policeman said, "You look like a couple of prats," right? And drove off. And Bill looked at me and said, "Is that an offence?"
Of course, now I've got to the age when I see people like that, I want to wind the window and say, "You look like a couple of brats."
Now, what's funny, you've gone from this svelte-like, angelic creature here, and I want to show you a picture of you taken last week, which you did, which
again,
Ellen
let
gave
me explain.
You this.
I can
you
explain,
need to explain this
I can
one,
explain
Gervais.
Everything. I want to do this show every day so I can come on and go, "Let me explain." This is great. This is amazing. Right. Okay, so the first time I did Ellen, she gave me some underwear. I think she gives it to all her guests, Ellen underwear. And I went, "Thanks very much." And the second time I did it, I said, "Oh, thanks for the underwear." Right? And she went, "Are you wearing it now?" I said, "No, I'm not wearing it now." I went, "Oh, I think I'm wearing my Elmo pants." Right? My girlfriend
I did Sesame Street, and the highlight of my career was meeting Elmo. I love the little guy. And I showed her them. So this time I went on, she showed a picture of those, she went, I've got you some better ones. And she showed me these and said, will you wear them for the Golden Globes? So I did.
But you actually posted that on your own blog. And the reason you did that is clearly because you think you're a bit of a looker there, don't you? You're proud of yourself.
I know, and that's got about 3 or 4 socks down it. You still can't tell. Can you?
But you used to be. When The Office came out, the great thing about you was you were just chunky, chubby Ricky. We all thought that could be the guy off the street.
Yeah.
You were overweight.
Yeah.
You know, everything about you was physically... Look, I mean, that's Joe Local.
Nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong with that at all.
Look at you now. You've become this kind of Hollywood glamour pinup.
As if. The thing is, I never worried about my weight. Never worried about it at all. I got fat. Who cares? And I still don't worry about it, really. But, this is the thing. I got fatter and fatter from the age of about 29 when I got my first job. I was a bit late. And I think I, got fatter and fatter.
What was the point when you went, how heavy were you when you went, that's enough?
14 stone.
And was there a moment of kind of self-awareness where you went, okay, that's enough?
I just felt like, where was it going to end? I didn't want to blow it, actually. Life's great, and I didn't want to wake up with a heart attack.
Did you feel also you'd been dealt this incredible hand where suddenly, in your late 30s, The Office broke out as this huge show?
Yeah.
I can remember the first moment I watched The Office. I was on my own in my apartment in London, turned on the TV. I thought it was a documentary.
That was you were meant to, yeah.
And literally, it worked. And I began watching this thing and I realised it was just complete comedy genius. But were you thinking, right, I'm 38, 39, I'm 14 stone, I've had this incredible sudden bit of luck in my career. All right, you made it. You worked hard to get it. I can't blow this. I've got to now play this game
Not
seriously.
Then, no. I didn't think it till last year. I didn't think it. Yeah. I didn't ever worry about my weight. I did routines. I mean, it gave me 20 minutes in every stand-up, you know. Now I think I've got to stop talking about my
weight. How much have you lost?
About 25 pounds.
And how have you done it?
Working out.
Any nip and tuck?
Oh, Jesus, no. Of course not.
Teeth whitened?
No, nothing. Nothing.
Quite gleaming.
Nothing.
No.
I had those things put on. The things you buy. I got from a luxury lounge. Yeah, I got from a.
Have you got vainer? Do you think since you've been a TV and film star?
No, no, I haven't been vain since that photo, the early one. Yeah, and no, I don't think I am. I think you mustn't be. If you start trying to be cool and sexy, you've lost it. You've just lost it certainly as a comedian. And you must ever take yourself too seriously, you know. There was a Roman emperor, apparently, who used to walk the streets, and they'd all come up to him, and he hired someone to whisper in his ear, you're just a man, you're just a man. And I've got friends and family. they're not even that complimentary.
Well, funny enough, after the break, I'm going to talk to you about some of your friends and family. Ricky Gervais, we're going to get low, down and personal.
Here he goes again.
One of the many surprising things about you, I think, is that you've managed throughout this extraordinary explosion of fame and fortune to keep the same woman.
Yeah.
Jane, who's been in your life since you were at university, 25 years.
And it's so funny because when The Office broke and I was sitting at home with my first two BAFTAs, you know, and just having a glass of wine, and I went, and I'm 40 now. Mm. And I said, why didn't I do this before? And she went, because you wouldn't have been any good. And it's so true. You've got to have life experiences. You've got to do something. You've got to have the struggle. And I fell into this, you know. I worked in an office for 7 years. That's why I like to think the attention to detail in the office was good. Mm. It had to be real. And it was absolutely essential to the show. that people thought it was a documentary. And it was also essential to the characters that they were acting up to the camera. Without it being a fake documentary, it was quite a boring sitcom. But as soon as you add that element of there being watched, so David Brent wants to become famous, which is I've always been fascinated with. I've always been fascinated with fame. I feared it.
Do you like being famous?
No, I'm getting better with it. But it's... one, I'm a very private person. You know, I've always been a private person. It's just I've never really wanted to put my mark on a wall as such. Certainly not for the sake of it. I've never wanted to be famous for the sake of it. I knew that was tragic. So I thought, well, okay, you might be famous if you're a successful comedian. You're a famous one. It's an upshot of what you do. It's not the driving force, but yeah. And I feared that. And I feared being lumped in with those people that will do anything to become famous. Those people that live their lives like an open wound, going, look at me, look at me. I didn't want it, you know. And so I thought, okay, I was ready for it. I was worried a little bit about press intrusion, but I've got better with that because I also realise now that sort of people ask for it.
But this week, for example, in America, it's gone crazy.
I don't like it.
And you've had, presumably, the paparazzi everywhere.
Yeah,
and...
but I don't like that because it makes
Because I can tell them, I was expecting you, to be honest, to come in and be... quite frivolous about what has been going, the furore. And actually, you took it quite seriously, I could tell.
Well, the reason it's okay is because I'm not ashamed of anything I did. You know, I got attention for something that I'm not ashamed of.
But it looks to me like it's not that it's rattled you a bit, but the attention it's attracted.
These things spin out of order. I know how, rumours start. And I think once you're trending on Twitter or everyone's writing about you... They have to come up with a new angle, so they have to push it.
And does part of you, being like, I guess all comedians are slightly insecure, always are, because you're always chasing a laugh.
I don't think I am insecure.
Not at all?
No, but
does part of you fear that...
I demand the truth. You see, I don't care. If you got me here and said, Ricky, I didn't find you funny, I've never found you funny. You've got an annoying face. I've never liked you. I go, that's fine. But if you say, and I saw you eating a squirrel in the park, I'd go, no, you didn't. You didn't. Everyone is entitled to their opinion, but they can't have their own facts.
So it was all the rumours spilling out of the Globes that you've been hauled off air and all that kind of thing.
And it's not that bad, it's just not true. You know, it's nothing bad. If they terrible things, that's when, I'd go, no. But there's so much misinformation out there. It doesn't even misinformation that's good, I think, oh, they've got that wrong. You know, they could... I'd be just annoyed if they said, Ricky Gervais, 6'3". I'd go, oh, actually, I'm 5'8". But get it, it's
are you,
more...
Are you easy to live with?
Yeah, I am, yeah.
Would Jane say that?
I hope so. I must be doing something right.
Well, but it's extraordinary. This day and age, to be honest, one in three marriages ends in divorce. You're not married, I know, but you've been together 25 years.
Yeah, we are married. We're just not married in the eyes of God, we share everything.
Is that the reason you haven't got married? Because you just don't believe in God, so what's the point?
No, it's just, I don't really see the point, really. But we are married. Everything is in both our names. As you say, it's more stable than most marriages. And this certificate that says you're married in the eyes of God, do they get divorced in the eyes of God as well? He doesn't come to the... divorce, does he? So it means it doesn't mean anything. It doesn't mean anything to say, I promise. We have promised. We're together. We're together for 30 years, and everything's equal. I just don't need that. I don't need that confirmation, really.
Do you think you'll ever have kids, or is that
no? Gone? No, we made
is that
a
deliberate, conscious decision?
Yeah,
why?
Yeah,
I think you'd be a good dad, wouldn't you?
I love kids. I love all my. Sisters and brothers' kids, and I play with them all day, and they say, right, I go, there's your now. I'm off to the pub. Yeah. Well, the burden of proof is on you.
Do you feel lucky to have someone like Jane, though?
Of course.
In a business that is so rattled with...
Of course.
Bad behaviour, cheating, and all the rest of it.
But I like to take some of the credit, 50% of it, you've got to try hard.
What's been the secret? Without being cheesy about it, what do you think the secret is?
There's no secret. It's obvious. It's whatever. Things in common, sense of humour... mutual respect, all those things, they're obvious.
But what I noticed backstage was she still laughs at your jokes.
Well, that's important, isn't it?
And that, after 25 years or more, is a pretty amazing achievement in any relationship, isn't it?
I still laugh at hers. I mean, this is the thing.
What did she say to you after the Globes this year?
She said, I've got the fast car, here's your disguise, and I've got two tickets to Cuba. I said, they can't fly to Cuba, we're in America. We're going to have to go to Europe and then on to Cuba.
When we come back, I want to talk to you about the American office and the rumours that you may be going into the American office, and also about your parents.
Sure.
Oscar, you brought your Speedo, I assume?
I don't wear a Speedo, Michael.
Well, you can't swim in leather pants. I'm just yanking your chain.
So, Ricky, the other hot story about you raging across the internet tonight is that you are apparently going back into the American version of The Office. I'm not going back, but in for the first time as a guest. Is that true?
It is true, but it was meant to be a secret one. So I read today that the producers released it. But it's, it's a little pop-up.
What's the part you play?
I just bump into Steve Carell, but it's just a... It's just a little thing that I did for Steve because he's going. So
did he feel weird? When you created this whole brand.
Yeah, I nearly forgot how to do it. I nearly forgot how to do David Brent. Then I realised...
So you played David Brent?
Yeah, you just act like an idiot. It's easy. It's so much fun. I've never had as much fun playing a character as David Brent because everything he does is so desperate that it's instantly funny, this man who so desperately wants to be loved, and he mistook sort of, you know, respect for popularity, which is sort of my point about fame. So many people make that mistake, you know. So, yeah.
When you first saw Steve Carell playing his version, did you feel like I did, oh, what a relief, he can do it? Because couldn't see how anyone could do.
But it got better and better. It got better and better, and it's fat. And it is different, and it has to be different. And I remember, first of all, people saying this won't work because we were the sort of darlings of the press. It won't work. It won't be the same. And we thought, well, no, it won't be the same, but it shouldn't be the same because the original version wouldn't have worked on network TV at 9 o'clock. And you know, it's much bigger than the original version.
Did he tell you that he was leaving the American version?
Yeah. Well, I sent him an email saying, "I think you're doing the right thing." As a producer, I was expected to try and stop him, you know, because, you know, he's a big part of it. But, you know, it can survive, whether it should or not. I don't know. I do feel that I'm just an advisor, and he's done an amazing job. He's done his time. Sounds like a prison sentence, doesn't it? And it's bigger than we ever thought it would be. It's more successful. He's bigger than I bet he ever thought he'd be. And he's done an amazing job.
If you could be trapped on a desert island with three other comedians in history, who would they be?
Laurel and Hardy would count for two of them straight away. I think the thing is, it's weird because America is sort of my mecca for comedy. I was brought up with...
So you've got to have one American then. Who would it be?
Comedian.
Who's the funniest man you've ever seen, or woman, in America?
In America, at the moment... Louis C.K. for stand-up. Mm-hmm. Will Arnett, just always funny. I just did a special for HBO called Talking Funny. Yeah. And it's me, Jerry Seinfeld, Chris Rock and Louis C.K.
Fantastic.
Just 4 hours of guys making each other laugh, talking about comedy. And I've never had so much fun. So those three.
You've got your own show, The Ricky Gervais Show, on HBO in its second season now. Tell me about that show, because it is hilarious. I am British, so I get all this stuff.
But it's another passion project. Everything I've ever done has been a labour of love. The Flanimals books that is now being made into a movie. I used to make my nephew laugh. You know, The Office. I used to work in an office and people watch. Extras. I was just thrown into this new life and I made notes and poked fun at it. And this was me in a room with Carl Pilkington and Stephen Merchant just chatting. There's nothing like it. There's nothing like making that connection. And I wanted it to be like they were eavesdropping. As a comedian, what you try and do is be as funny on stage or on telly or in a film as you are in a pub with people you know and trust and drinking
with. If you had 5 minutes left to live, what's the joke you'd tell?
There's four jokes I just realised I can't tell. It's bad, isn't it?
Well, I'll tell you what. I'm going to give you a time to think about this and we'll come back after the break.
If you just talk, I find that your mouth comes out with stuff.
Right, there's another quote. Right. There is another quote.
That, if you talk, that, your mouth comes out with
that. That to me is stands along with what were those things in Gremlins called?
No, but what I mean, if you sit there and try and use your brain to do it,
right,
it doesn't work the same. Just keep talking. Just keep your mouth talking, and eventually it will come out with something pretty good.
Carl Bildington is fantastic.
He's a genius. He's an absolute genius.
And actually, he is literally a comic genius because he just does come out with stuff.
No, he is. He's an artist. He sees the world differently, and there's no filter. He says what's on his mind. He's got these amazing theories, and he's got these wonderful little malapropisms. But he's such a sweet little creature. Mm. You know, he's got that childlike quality. He's like Homer Simpson. Nothing he says is malicious. He doesn't understand the world like we do.
Will you be as brutal with the Ricky Gervais show, which airs on HBO on Fridays, I should say, will you be as brutal with that as you have been with your other shows? Is it two seasons and bang?
No, not at all. I'd love this to run and run because it's reportage, it's a real thing. It's just guys talking that we then edit down, and then the animation adds so much to it because, you know, on the podcast, we did this. There's three guys in the room. We used to talk about something, anything, and we talk about the big issues. We weren't talking like comedy or pop, or we were talking about philosophy and the meaning of life and religion and, you know, all those really serious stuff that he could get his, you know, teeth into. And he doesn't think he's being funny, but you know, we're talking about the three wise men bringing gifts to the baby Jesus, and Carl said, were those presents for his birthday or Christmas? Which is a brilliant question, isn't it? It's such a great question. And he's childlike and he asks things about the world.
Can I ask you a difficult question?
Go on.
Is it true you turned down Mission Impossible 3, Pirates of the Caribbean and Ocean's 13?
Yeah.
Are you mad?
No, because I was busy.
Did you ever imagine you'd be too busy to be in three of the greatest franchises in movie history?
Oh, I knew they were good. I didn't turn them down for any other reason other than...
No, did you ever think when you were young Ricky Gervais you could ever be in that position to turn movies down like that?
I never thought about I'd ever be offered a movie. But you've got to realise that I've turned about 100 movies down. It's not because I think I'm above it or they were bad. It's because I was doing other things. You know, I was writing and creating The Office. I was writing and creating Extras. I still manage the estate of The Office and Extras every day, and now with the American version, it's on its 8th remake.
How many DVDs have you sold?
I've probably about 7 or 8 million.
So how rich are you?
Oh, come on. You know Simon Cowell.
I do. Yeah. Are you richer than him?
No.
You can't be far off.
It started off so well. I preferred it when you were saying you're going to take me to a darkened room and spank me. It was less awkward.
What would your parents have made of your success? Because your mother died just before you hit the big time. Your dad saw a little bit of The Office.
She saw me do a bit of telly, but they were proud of me and all my family. They were no more impressed with this than they should be. They were proud of me when I grew up a nice person and didn't hurt anyone. And I remember... And they were honest. My family were always honest to me. I remember when I was about 13, I've got much older brothers and sisters. And I said to my mum, why are my brothers and sisters so much older than me? And she went, because you were a mistake. Which is great. And
you've been making mistakes ever since, haven't you?
Exactly, yeah. But, you know, I love that. And
what were the values that they instilled in you, do you think?
Work hard and pay your way, then you can have a laugh. Then you can have a drink.
And do you?
Yeah, that's all I do.
Do you get to enjoy the fruits of your hard work, do you think?
No, I enjoy the hard work. That's what I enjoy. I enjoy this. I wake up and it's a privilege that I can have an idea. Nothing gives me an adrenaline rush like an idea. What a privilege that I can have an idea and start working on that. I'd never take that for granted. And as long as I tried my best and I'm proud at what I did, I can't ask for anything else. And Bob Dylan said, a man can consider himself a success if he wakes up in the morning, goes to bed at night, and in between did exactly what he wanted.
Can I rephrase that? I think a man's a success when he wakes up in the morning, pricks a few Hollywood ego balloons in the afternoon, and goes home and has a pint.
Cheers.
Cheers, Ricky.
Lovely.